you turn to Marketplace for the latest news about what's happening in the economy and how it impacts you and your community. When you donate to support our nonprofit newsroom, you can also get something a little more tangible. We have a great lineup of donor thank you gifts right now. A shrinkflation mini tote bag, water bottles, mugs, hats, and more. Contribute any amount to make a difference and pick up one of these gifts. Go to marketplace.org/givetech.
It's Marketplace Tech for October 12th. I'm Molly Wood in San Francisco. One way tech is changing our society fast, the way we watch TV. For a couple of years now, the TV industry has been fretting about cord cutters, people who might dump their pay TV because of an abundance of online choices. But a new study out from Forrester says the industry has a lot more to fear from the people called cord nevers, the ones who have never subscribed to pay TV and probably never will. James McQuivy is the Forrester analyst who wrote the study. James, thanks for coming on.
Hi there.
It sounds like the headline that you found here is potentially dire for the TV industry, that in just 10 years, 50% of adults under 32 will not subscribe to cable.
Not the way we think of it today, but yes, that's the number. And it turns out it's already 35%. So we got to face it. If you're that good at watching TV without paying for TV, you're going to keep doing it.
One thing that's interesting is that we keep hearing that Apple is in talks with TV networks and that Amazon is trying to create a pay TV streaming service, and none of them seem to go anywhere. Do you think that the industry is making a mistake with not signing on to maybe one of these over-the-top subscription services that someone else would like to launch?
Whether it's a mistake or not, I'm not sure. They are giving content to places like Sling. They're giving content to Sony PlayStation View, which is an over-the-top TV provider. But mostly because they think those are good experiments that they can learn from. They don't want to give content to Apple and Amazon. At the same time, if suddenly someone does give content to Apple or Amazon and they find that, hey, we're the Discovery Channel and we're not there, we look really bad. So I think they're all in conversation, mostly trying to find out, is it real? Is this going to happen? Because if it is, we want to be a part of it.
And is there a sense, do you think, that those cord nevers might be willing to subscribe to something like an over-the-top service? Or is that an unknown?
No, I would say they would. I would say they would look at that not as buying pay TV, but getting more out of their Apple or their Amazon relationship.
Yeah, I mean, it seems to me that that would be a lifeline for the broadcasters and the programmers.
Very much so, if they have to. But they want to postpone that day as long as they possibly can so that the current economics, which are so lucrative, stay just where they are for as long as possible.
James McQuivy is a Forrester analyst. Thanks a lot, James.
Yeah, absolutely. Happy to.
Twitter has plans to try to make more money off videos embedded in tweets. The company will start placing short ads before videos that publishers upload, and it will split the revenue with them. It's a lot like the way YouTube handles ads, but the split for publishers is better. Twitter will pay 70% and keep 30%. Now, by comparison, YouTube keeps 45% of ad sale revenue. And the change is happening just as there's a lot of new competition for YouTube. Here's Lucas Shaw, a reporter for Bloomberg News.
What's happened in the last year or two is a ton of different companies have come into this space trying to steal some market share from YouTube, whether it's Twitter or Facebook, kind of other big social companies. Some of the pay TV providers like Comcast and Verizon have introduced their own services. And then there's startups that have also tried to take some of it.
Shaw says YouTube probably isn't in any serious trouble yet, but there are certainly more options for advertisers, publishers, and of course us viewers than there used to be. There's a new film festival touring North America, and it requires headgear. The Kaleidoscope Virtual Reality Film Festival wraps up in Austin on Wednesday of this week. Reporter Ibi Caputo checked out Kaleidoscope when it was in New York.
At first, virtual reality can be a little, well, disorienting. I put on the headset, read the health and safety warning on the screen, and launch into The Night Cafe, the painting by Van Gogh.
Right now I'm, walking into a wall. I turn my head and I walk into another wall. Okay. How do I turn around? I think I have to turn my entire body to turn around.
In that film, or as people in the virtual reality world call it, in that experience, I used a touchpad on the side of my headset to move around the famous painting. That's just one of the experiences people can have at Kaleidoscope, a festival where filmmaking intersects with game playing. Festival founder Renee Pinnell says bumping into walls is part of the experience and the experiment.
No one knows how to tell a story in virtual reality right now, so to do it, you're going to have to fail, you're going to have to try something, and it's not going to work.
Bumping into walls aside, it was pretty cool to get close to Van Gogh's bar. From swivel chairs set in rows, festival goers could also be transported to post-earthquake Nepal or to a devastated city in Syria. And there were more abstract experiences as well, animations like Lover, in which infatuation is expressed in a vibrantly colored 360-degree diagram. Festival goer Jaina Fitzgerald says she's not going to go out and buy her own headset just yet, but...
If it's like something like an iPhone where it becomes accessible, then I would definitely consider it because it seems like a great way to have a very short experience on your own.
With the medium still in its infancy, though, there are still a lot of kinks to work out, like how to make the headsets less clunky and how to get rid of overly pixelated images. But Pinnell says those tech upgrades are only a matter of time. In New York, I'm Ibi Caputo for Marketplace.
And a little more news from Dell. It looks like the company might be taking at least part of itself public after going private in 2013. Dell owns a cybersecurity unit called Dell SecureWorks, Inc. Sources told the Wall Street Journal that it's working on an IPO that could happen before the end of the year. That IPO could be worth about $2 billion, according to the journal. This is after news reports of a $50 billion plus acquisition of storage and cloud computing company EMC. Some analysts suggested that could happen as early as this week. You have to admit, Dell is coming out of its two-year hibernation with a bang. I'm Molly Wood, and that's Marketplace Tech. This is APM.
Hey everyone, it's Rima Khreis, host of This Is Uncomfortable. If you're looking for some good recommendations on books to read, well, you should join This Is Uncomfortable's Summer Book Club. Every other week in our newsletter, we'll share a new book that'll make you rethink your relationship to money, class, and work, while also featuring an interview with the author or an expert on the topic. Plus, when you join, you'll be entered in a giveaway where you could win some This Is Uncomfortable merch. Be sure to check it out. Sign up today at marketplace.org/bookclub.